Hi there, my name's Oisín Lunny and welcome to Audio Talks, presented to you by Harman, the podcast where we meet the people reshaping how we hear the world. And today I am thrilled to be joined by Marcela Rada, audio engineer, doctoral researcher, educator and leading force in the world of immersive audio. From her early days in Colombia to teaching around the world, from launching her PhD on spatial audio to building the Immersive Lounge, Marcela's journey is both technical and visionary. In this episode, we're going to be diving deep into why immersive audio is so important, what makes it work, where the industry is headed, and why the future might not be stereo at all. Let's get into it. Welcome to the podcast, Marcela Rada.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us, Marcela. It is great to catch up with you again. So listen, you've got a really interesting backstory. You're doing some really interesting work. So let's dive right into it and start at the beginning. I would love to know, what drew you to audio engineering in the first place? Like, was there a defining moment or an early experience that helped to shape your path today?
Yes, definitely started from a very early age. But that defining moment, I would describe, I was about 6 years old. My passion for audio, I was born with it, I would say. But when I was six, I discovered this field recorder that my mother had just lying around. And I figured out how it worked and I found it fascinating that I could record myself, you know, hear it all back. And that was kind of my toy, one of those toys that you remember as a child, you know. From then on, I just fell in love with sound, with recording, with music. I learned to record the radio and do all the things that we did back then with cassettes. And when I was about 12 years old, I was listening to Dream Theater. And I've always had a very curious mind. And also, I've always loved school and academia. So naturally, as I was listening to Dream Theater, I thought, how did they learn to play like this? And so I Googled them and I discovered that they met at Berklee College of Music. I was like, oh, what is Berklee College of Music? So then I Googled that. And then I realized that it was this amazing school. And then I looked into what you could study there. And that was the first time I saw audio engineering. As I read through the description of the program, I thought, okay, that's it. That's what I want to do. That's all I've ever dreamed of. So when I was 12 years old, I decided that I was going to be an audio engineer.
Wow, that is some vision right there. Absolutely.
And that I was going to go to Berklee, which I ended up doing.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. That's such a great vision from such an early age. And I think we say a little thank you to Google right now for helping you to find out those next step. You know, you made it to Berklee. You are a very well-known and very well-loved recording engineer now in the world. You're doing amazing work and you've had actually a really diverse career. You've done recording, mixing. You've done a lot of teaching at places like Algonquin and the University of Lethbridge. So take us through the kind of intervening years, you know, after that moment when the penny dropped, you were 6 years old, you got the recorder, you were 12, you Googled how all this stuff works and you actually made it happen. Talk to us a bit about some of those formative experiences during those early years when you were making your way through the industry.
Yes, for me, it has been a very academic journey. And I understand that that's not the path for everyone. So when people ask me, I always tell them this is a very personal experience and journey, and it relates to my interests and my personality, right? So I wouldn't tell everyone that they need to go through all the degrees that I have because I have a very long list of academic achievements, which I just simply love. Some people learn in very different ways. So I would just clarify that for me, that was the path. And so I started in academia and studying, and I did do some internships in between as I was a student. A lot of what I've learned has been through academia, hence why I became an educator. I've always loved to share my knowledge and I've always loved to learn from others. And so the academic world is where, well, it's one of the worlds where I feel most comfortable and where I feel that I can contribute a lot. That's kind of what happened. I studied a lot. I got a Bachelor of Music with a major in digital audio arts. So I learned to read and write music. I have musicianship skills, but I also developed my technical skills throughout that time. I ended up teaching at the school where I did my bachelor's. So that was really great because I went back and contributed to the development of the program. When I did my master's in music production, technology and innovation at Berkeley, that's where I digged deeper into spatial audio. I discovered binaural and ambisonic recording back in 2015. And I remember thinking when I first listened to my first binaural recording, I remember thinking, why would we do stereo? You know, if we have this, why in the world would we do stereo? So since 2015, I've been simply obsessed. And so fast forward a couple of years, 2018, I started my master's and I focused on spatial audio for VR, lots of ambisonic recordings and rendering for VR. But I also did lots of 360 film of, you know, live performances. And so I've always kind of been in three different worlds, the research, the industry, and then the teaching. Now that I'm doing the PhD, that is combining everything all at once. So I'm really happy with what I'm doing now.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it's a real journey, you know, and one thing very much leads to the other. I remember when I first came across your work, it was many years ago, and you gave this amazing presentation as part of an Audio Engineering Society online summit. And again, it was so much in the spirit of this technical excellence, this viewpoint, these insights on innovation and sharing the knowledge. And you were kind of sharing how to use certain tools for getting started in immersive mixing and all this kind of stuff. So it's really like a through line that runs through your entire career and still does today. I want to take you back in time a little bit because there was a very cool interview with Headliner Hub that I came across recently. And in this, you mentioned that designing an immersive audio course itself led you to begin your PhD. So I'd love it if you could rewind and tell us, what exactly did you discover that made you feel the need to research this more deeply?
So I started as a full-time lecturer at the University of Lethbridge back in 2022. At the time, I designed quite a few courses or modules, as they call them here in England. One of them was about spatial audio. Now I had a background in spatial audio. I was ready to teach the students about binaural and ambisonic recordings, about all the plugins that are available out there, how to use them in different digital audio workstations and for XR platforms as well, because I think spatial audio is a great application for VR and AR. And so I was designing the course about that, but then I realized that the students really wanted to know how it applies to music. And fair enough, it's a great application for music, but at the time that was the kind of the boom of Dolby Atmos in music. And so we were all kind of trying to figure it out and learn about it. Then streaming platforms started supporting it. So now Apple Music supported Dolby Atmos. And then they were offering higher royalties. And it was this whole thing happening in the music industry that I thought, okay, we really need to do the research. But at the university I was teaching full time, didn't have time to do research. And then this opportunity at the University of Surrey came. Well, I had a few conversations with my current supervisor, and then I thought, okay, I really want to do this research. And then everything just kind of came together. Sometimes in life, when things are very smooth and they come together, you know they're for you and you have to do them. Then, you know, it's when that opportunity appears, you just have to take it. And that's what happened. I always knew I was going to do a PhD. I wasn't sure when. And it all just kind of worked out. All the moving parts came together. And I thought this was the perfect time because everybody's just kind of trying to figure out how to integrate spatial audio in their practices. And I'm not just talking about audio engineers, not just the mixing engineers, but developers, hardware, software, streaming platforms, record labels, everything across media at this point. And since there has been a lot of investment in developing hardware and software, it just makes sense that we produce good music / content. That's where the idea of the focus of my PhD came from. I'm focusing on workflows and guidelines for immersive music production. Because as others are focusing on developing the hardware and software and psychoacoustics and perception of spatial audio, I'm focusing on the production of the actual music and content. So then we have really high quality music to listen to.
This is fantastic because it really fits into your whole mission, which is discovering new things, sharing them, sharing the knowledge, and really for that rising tide to lift all of the boats. And in the field of immersive, you've really highlighted some gaps in the industry knowledge, and you are researching things that other people are not looking into. And so this is really specialized, really useful information. Now, how would you recommend that people can actually have a look at this research, and how can they dive into the results that you have been discovering as part of your PhD?
I've already published a paper with my initial results. It was published through the AES convention at Warsaw in May. That actually won best paper. So everybody should definitely read it. So the findings will be published through conference papers, journals, presentations. But I'm realizing that I need to share the knowledge for different audiences. And so as I publish through academic platforms, I am also publishing through the Immersive Lounge. So this is the first I am announcing this, but the Immersive Lounge is actually going to have an educational platform where I am going to share all of these findings in the form of videos and tutorials so people can also watch if perhaps they don't want to read the whole paper.
That's brilliant. Oh, listen, congratulations on the AES result. I'm not remotely surprised that it won the best paper. That is excellent news. But, you know, for our listeners, you know, the previous guest was Dr. Sean Olive, and he was the former president of the AES. So, you know, we are big fans of the AES. It is the home of kind of excellence in audio and education. And so to win the best paper at the AES convention is kind of a big deal. It really is. So congratulations there. And Marcella, you actually gave us a world exclusive there. So thank you for, on behalf of the Audio Talks podcast, you are putting these findings into your new collective, which is called the Immersive Lounge. And this is such great news because you're reaching a whole new audience. Can you talk to us a bit about what exactly the Immersive Lounge is, just in case folks listening haven't come across it already? And talk to us a bit about how it came together and what is your mission?
So the Immersive Lounge is an artist-focused immersive music production collective. We are a team of 14 right now. We're made out of audio engineers, composers, producers, cinematographers, and just creatives, artists. And we guide artists throughout the process of composing and producing their music for immersive formats. So we do lots of pre-production sessions where we really think about the piece immersively, but we allow artists to kind of draft and craft their visions as we provide guidance and knowledge based on my research, of course. And then we record, we mix, we distribute, and we also share the performance on YouTube. It's a whole process working with the artists and guiding them through that journey of writing for immersive formats. But as we do this, we're conducting research, applying in the results from initial work. The idea is to output some great productions and music for people to listen to and watch, but also to write about these processes and how the artists benefit from being a part of it. A lot of what happens at the moment with immersive music is that the creative decisions fall on the mixing engineer. And for us, the idea is that by the time it gets to the mixing engineer, the artist has had an input in influencing how the music will be spatialized. So that's where it came from, actually having a practice-based approach to my research, to have a portfolio to also show everyone what we're doing, what's possible, and hopefully so they can be inspired by it. But it's also an educational platform, and it's a way for me to reach broader audiences and be able to share all this knowledge. I can't just have all of this and keep it to myself, right? So the idea is to speak to industry and to those who are perhaps not so involved with the academic world.
This is a wonderful thing to gift to the world of music, and particularly, you know, music professionals and music enthusiasts and creatives who maybe wouldn't have access to the immersive, you know, mix engineering decisions that typically exist further down the chain. So you're kind of bringing this to the fore, you're educating people in a different way that they can relate to. I'm curious to know, what have some of the results been like? Because as you say, musicians don't typically perform with the final immersive mix in mind, but you're actually changing this. How has that affected some of the results?
For artists who have actually been using the technology, and has been kind of a game changer for them, because they are thinking about the compositions differently. They're thinking about how their listeners will experience their music differently. And it's allowed for more creativity, for a new opportunity to do something different and new and exciting. And so we have some guidelines that can help artists throughout the process of doing this. What I'm doing with these guidelines is to save people from the trial and error process that a lot of us have gone through. One of the common patterns that a lot of my participants described was the lack of access to education and mentorship. And so basically, if you're not a part of this very small circle that has all the answers, it's hard to know what's going on and what's working and what's not and what's changing and what's not. Since I do have access to the small circles, I'm gathering the information so then I can share it through these guidelines. So a lot of the findings have to do with the pre-production process, the composing, the arrangement, thinking about the music immersively, and then the recording process, the recording techniques, and how we can prepare the music, how the music can be, you know, recorded properly for an immersive environment. So there's lots about that. And then when it comes to the mixing process, that there's a lot in there when it comes to the software that's being used, the techniques for spatializing music, how it's distributed and how we monitor. So then we know that it translates well across devices, from a speaker system to headphones to a soundbar to a vehicle. You know, it's what we do, the same for stereo. We check that it's going to sound good everywhere, right? And so is it the same process for an immersive mix? It can be a bit more complex. There are just quite a few things that need to be done. And even then, you know, there are still many challenges and limitations that I am highlighting in my research, so then the developers of hardware and software can target.
Oh, very good. Very good. I mean, would you have an example of one of those challenges that you're kind of highlighting so that engineers and developers and musicians can maybe be aware of it?
So there are quite a few moving parts that you need to pay attention to as well. You need to know about, and you need to have the tools to use to be able to monitor and do the playback and understand what's going on. So, you know, understanding that there is an HRDF applied to the binaural format and how that's going to sound different through different platforms, to then how is that going to sound through different speaker systems, to how to, you know, just kind of listen from your phone, whether you have an Android or an iPhone. So there's just quite a few different things that we need to know about. And it's, the information is out there, but it's not reaching the common listener.
Yeah, it's a complicated and kind of fast moving area. So are there any specific tools that you'd recommend to anyone listening starting out on the immersive audio path? Obviously, tool number one, get over to the immersive lounge and start kind of diving in. But if there are any for our wonderful podcast listeners, you know, producers, musicians, engineers, that kind of thing, are there any specific tools that you'd recommend to our podcast listeners, to anyone starting out on the immersive audio path today?
Because it depends on the DAW that they use, but Pro Tools has Dolby Atmos integrated into it. If you have Pro Tools Ultimate, Logic is a really easy one. Logic also already has Dolby Atmos embedded into it. So it's a very, very easy setup. I mean, in terms of what is going to work for commercial music at the moment, Dolby Atmos would be the one to start with, because that's the one supported by music streaming platforms. And so if that's the intent to use it for music, there are other plugins out there, which I've spoken about before at different presentations. They're free and they're out there to use. But when it comes to music specifically, Dolby Atmos is the only one that's supported. So if that is the goal, then the easiest thing would be to use Pro Tools or Logic and start with the internal renderer and then go from there.
Excellent advice. And I presume there's going to be lots on the Immersive Lounge for people who are maybe they've made those initial steps and then they can find out more about the transferability and what to do next with their immersive internal renderings from Pro Tools or Logic. So that's fantastic.
Exactly. So we had one artist who only worked in Logic and who had a very stereo effect chain.
Right.
So we worked through how to then make that an immersive chain. I guided him through that process, but I let him do it because I don't want to have that kind of input in that production. It's kind of like his signature sound. So I wanted him to be able to do it on his own. But then he came back a few weeks later with an effect chain that worked for a 714 setup. And then he told me that he was preparing to play at a festival in Belgium where they have an immersive sound system. And he said, and you know what? I'm actually ready to perform live like that because I now have an immersive effect chain. And this is why it's so important to do it during pre-production, because regardless of whether it's Dolby Atmos or at the venue, they have something like L Acoustics or whatever it is that they have. The artist has a vision. They understand the technology and they're going to be prepared for it.
That's so interesting. I love this overlap between engineering and art and science and technology and creativity. It's really coming together in a very significant way, I think, with immersive production in particular. And I remember, I think in one interview, you mentioned that you were not super keen on retrofitting mixes. So taking something that was recorded in the stereo and then retrofitting it for immersion. What would be the number one piece of advice for producers to approach immersive from day one? Is it simply to use those immersive formats? Is there something kind of broader than that?
A lot of these mixes that were taken from stereo mixes, hey, some of them really work. And so I don't want to say that perhaps they didn't, or some really didn't. But really, just thinking about that, not everything is fit for immersive. Let's not force it. That's how I think about it. It's not that I'm like, everything needs to be immersive. I don't want to hear it in stereo. I do make jokes about that, but the truth is not everything is fit for an immersive environment. If it wasn't meant for that, it just makes it a lot harder. And at the end, you might not have a great result because it was simply not meant to be in that environment. So for this reason, my recommendation is, if that's the goal, if the intent is to create an immersive mix, then create something for it. Otherwise, it's just really hard to get to the post-production stages and kind of work with what you have to work with, you know? And that's still happening a lot, I get it. And a lot of engineers do their best, and some of them do some really great work. So it is possible, although it just makes it a lot more challenging.
Yeah, immersive is all well and fine, but one shouldn't overlay immersiveness just for the sake of overlaying immersiveness. That's really sound advice. I mean, do you think immersive could ever become as standard and as widespread as stereo in music production?
Yes, I do think so. Yeah. There is a huge misconception that it's something for the future, that we're not ready yet. When I talk to some people about my research, the ones who are people who are not perhaps as up to date with the technology, they still think that's just not here, or that it still needs a lot of development. The reality is that there has been a lot of investment by the big tech companies on developing hardware and software. The technology is widely available and accessible. If you have Apple Music or Amazon or Tidal, you can already listen to spatial audio mixes. And if you have a pair of headphones and a phone, great. So that's the kind of accessibility I'm talking about. Now, there are sound bars that are really great for immersive playbacks. We have TVs. We have the new vehicles come with this kind of immersive systems. Of course, that is not widely accessible to everyone. I understand that. But when it comes to the technology and whether it exists, it's there. So is this something that we already have access to that perhaps whether you knew or not, you're already listening to it? At live venues, there's lots of them that already have immersive sound systems. And so these are things that someone might not be completely aware of that that's what they're listening to, but it's there and it's here. And I don't think it's going anywhere. So the idea is that also it's not just music, it's film, it's XR platforms, is gaming. You know, there's so many other industries and media where spatial audio has already been integrated for a long time and music is simply catching up.
Yeah, fantastic. That's great advice. And I saw you commenting the other day on LinkedIn about the wonderful new format called Eclipse Audio. So there's so much exciting stuff happening and it's moving fast. And I really think one of the great things you do that's of huge value to the entire music and production and engineering community is you filter all this stuff and you communicate it in a way that's very relatable and you help people take those shortcuts because, you know, you do the long academic work, so not everyone else has to. So again, thanks for that. Speaking of which, you know, your PhD is really ambitious. Once the research is kind of complete, where would you say you're headed next? Are there any new projects that you can talk about right now?
You know, when you're doing a PhD, there's this question where people ask you, when are you going to be done? And it's such a stressful question.
Right.
Because you're just trying to survive and get through it. No, but I'm due to finish in 2027. So by 2027, yeah, in about 2 years from now, I will hopefully be done. And what happens after that? Well, I'll have a dissertation that will be published and that could potentially become a textbook. We'll see about that because that's a really long process too. But the idea is that it will inform both industry and academia. I would love for educators to be able to use it to develop their own curriculum. And I would love for industry to use it to develop whatever technology or product or production that they're working on. So what's after that for me is to continue what I've been doing for a long time, which is working in both industry and academia, educating, consulting, recording, mixing, producing, and speaking, and doing all the things that I do. I'm always very active. I'm always doing something different, always very much related to music, audio, creativity, and research. And as long as I am doing all of those, I'll be okay.
100%. Okay, listeners, we'll watch this space. It's all good. And speaking of which, how do you see the immersive lounge scaling up? I mean, what kind of things might people look out for in the future of TIL?
TIL is a big dream and there's just so much that we can do. And I've also been able to gather an amazing team, which I am just so thankful for because we're doing quite a lot and it's been a very short period of time. We've already achieved all our goals. And so, yeah, the goal was to launch the collective, start working with artists, start creating, you know, our online platforms and reaching out to people and securing partnerships. And we've been able to do all of that in a matter of months. So it's been great. And I think there's a lot of potential. We are based in London, UK. And so this is kind of the people and industry that we're in. In terms of scaling up, the idea is to collaborate with other companies, developers of technology, to test workflows and to continue to provide support to artists. And a way bigger dream would be to have an actual immersive lounge.
I love it. Oh, listen, I am going to be looking out for that news in the future for sure. That's such a great idea. I love it. If folks want to follow your work, like your PhD progress, any TIL events, any immersive projects, where is the best place for them to look?
All social media platforms, The Immersive Lounge. That's how you can find us. LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. I'm very active on social media as well, and I post about my findings. So I'm very easy to find. Marcella Rada.
Fantastic. And we'll, of course, be linking to all of those in the show notes, dear listeners. So my advice, get on over and follow the adventures of Marcella and the Immersive Lounge. I have two questions for you now. Number one is there any bit of advice that you'd like to share with our listeners? So say for engineers or artists, they want to jump into immersive audio. Is there any advice that you haven't mentioned already that you would absolutely like to send their way?
My advice is always to not be afraid of change. And this applies to immersive audio and it applies to life. And I've never been afraid of change. As you probably know, I move a lot and I'm always changing environments. Not because I get tired of them, but because there's just so much to do and so many new opportunities and you just kind of gotta jump and do it, you know? And so when it comes to immersive audio, hey, that's just a new adventure in a new environment where you might be able to get inspired or start something new. And I think just not being afraid of change and just trying things out, it's a great thing to do in life and in immersive audio.
Words to live by right there. Thank you, Marcella. I have one more question for you. It's one that we ask all of our VIP guests, everyone from A.R. Rahman to Carl Cox, and that is to choose a track for our Audio Talks title playlist. What's it going to be?
A track that I've been listening to a lot that I love, and it's a good reference for an immersive mix, in my opinion, is Good Morning Heartache by Christian Sands.
Fantastic. That's great. And would you recommend folks listen to that in an immersive format to get the most out of it?
Yes.
Excellent. All right. And my own contribution to the playlist is going to be one from The Vaults, Brian Eno and John Hassell with Delta Rain Dream, because I just love the immersive quality of it. I'm taking a bit of a liberty there with the definition of immersive, but it just takes me somewhere very special. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us on the Audio Talks podcast, Marcella Rada. That has been fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope that this was informative and useful and hopefully inspiring for your audience.
For sure. And I will see you in the Immersive Lounge someday.
I would love to have you.
Wonderful. So folks, thank you so much for joining us. That was Marcella Rada reminding us that sound isn't just heard. It's felt, shaped and spatially alive. To learn more about her work, visit the Immersive Lounge online or check out the links in the show notes. If you enjoyed this conversation, leave us a rating, share it and subscribe for more deep dives into the future of sound. For more exclusive content, some behind the scenes goodies and maybe even some competitions, connect with us over on the Instagram. You can find us at Audio Talks Podcast. We'll be back soon for some more immersive Audio Talks. See you next time.